Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. I'm Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is our eighth episode. Today we're going to be talking about power building, what is it, who can benefit from it, and we have a special guest, Aaron Fergus, our first guest ever. So, stay tuned.
So it's still snowing out here, Danny.
Yeah, I've noticed. I'm aware.
Hasn't stopped, has it?
No, it hasn't stopped at all, and I'm so over it. I actually bought one of those lights that you shine on your face that's supposed to make you feel better because it's been so dark and dreary and miserable outside, and it's actually pretty cool. It kind of works, so yeah. I'm happy with it so far.
I don't mind it. I'm out snowboarding, so the more snow, the better.
But we had a decent few weeks. We just went down to Amherst, Massachusetts to see Matt Rossigno give a talk at UMass Amherst on Monday. Matt is a registered dietitian, and he was giving a talk about being vegan and sports nutrition.
Plant-based and powerful was the name of the talk.
Yeah.
He was talking to college students.
Nutrition students, some grad students. And it was a really good talk. He has a really great approach, and I really appreciate his scientific, no bullshit method. Not making crazy claims, but also giving the real benefits of being vegan and what that means to sports and your recovery. So that was really cool. If you haven't heard about him, I suggest checking him out. He has co-written several books, including Appetite for Reduction, a new superfoods book about cacao. And he also...
No Meat Athlete, he co-authored.
No Meat Athlete, that's right. And he is also one of the people who runs Strongest Hearts, which is a documentary-making organization that makes mini-documentaries about vegan athletes, and they're really, really cool.
Yeah, so all-around kick-ass guy.
So today we're going to be talking about power building. I guess the best place to start here is, what is powerlifting?
Powerlifting is when you train to be as strong as possible in the three big compound multi-joint movement lifts in the gym: deadlifting, squatting, and bench press.
And you go to compete, and you get three attempts to lift as much weight as possible for one rep in each of those lifts. So the goal is to put up as much weight as possible in these lifts
just once
for one rep. So that is the goal of powerlifting. What is bodybuilding? Well, we've talked about that quite a bit on here.
Almost ad nauseum, but that's because it's our sport of choice. But anyway, bodybuilding is when you train to increase the size of your muscles as much as possible and to also have them look as aesthetically pleasing as possible and be symmetrical at the same time.
So basically, it's a competition of aesthetics. Building your
Pretty
muscles,
much.
Showing the muscles by being lean enough, posing properly, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see how these sports are similar in some ways, but mostly incredibly different. In fact, most people would think that they are at opposite ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
The bodybuilders want to look as strong as possible, but it doesn't really matter if they are. And the powerlifters want to be as strong as possible, and it doesn't really matter what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
So power building is a relatively new term in the last 5 years or so, tops. And it is basically a training style that's a hybrid of both programs.
Traditionally, when someone thinks of a training program for bodybuilding, they think of hypertrophy, training in the 8 to 15-ish rep range, because that is the rep range where you're poised to grow your muscles as much as possible. Whereas powerlifting program, you want to be as strong as possible, so you're going to stick to the power rep range, which is 5 reps or below. And the old school philosophy is, well, you're going to do one or the other, and that's why people think of them as the
exclusive.
Exactly. But is it necessarily beneficial to only do hypertrophy style training if you want to be the best bodybuilder you can be?
I think that in the natural bodybuilding game, which is where we lie, that no, training specifically in a quote-unquote hypertrophy rep range is not necessarily the best way to be the best bodybuilder possible. Muscle growth, the biggest factor in muscle growth, is increasing the volume of your workouts over time, which is sets times reps times weight lifted. And by increasing your strength, you're able to increase that, which is going to help you build more muscle. So focusing on strength and power and those big compound lifts, one, is awesome. It makes you feel like a badass. And two, more importantly, it makes you more able to increase your training volume over time, which is going to lead to more muscle growth.
What's happened in the past, and I used to follow this type of training regimen myself, bodybuilding 10, 15 years ago, is, I wanted my muscle bellies to grow as much as possible. So I would stick to the hypertrophy style range, but also knowing that if I was stronger, I'd be able to lift more weight and
in that rep range
that it would help me to powerlift as well. But what I would do in the past is I would, I would stick to hypertrophy style training programming exclusively, for maybe 1, 2, 3 months at a time. And then I would throw a little bit of powerlifting in for maybe 1 month because I figured I want to do the majority of my lifting in the hypertrophy style range. The problem with that is that, you're sacrificing one for the other. And that's where power building comes into play. You do them both at the same time.
So how would a powerlifter benefit from incorporating more hypertrophy work into their program?
Well, the accessory work that you get from training in hypertrophy style will make you stronger with your compound lifts. So in other words, say you can't, you're getting stuck in your bench press and you can't press the weight up. Well, it might make sense to strengthen up your triceps, and it would be helpful to do that by maybe, doing some
isolation lifts.
Any isolation lift in a hypertrophy style rep range.
Because typically powerlifters don't do a lot of isolation work, and typically bodybuilders are known for doing a ton of isolation work. Mm. And, I find that the answer usually lies in the middle. Not that I think power building is the answer for everybody by any stretch, but when there's one extreme and another extreme, I usually like to take whatever's in the middle of that. I'm sure many people have heard of these stereotypes of bodybuilders being like big and muscly and ripped, but those muscles having no function. They're not actually strong. They can't lift anything impressive or anything like that. And on the flip side, powerlifters are known for being super, super strong, but often out of shape and overweight. And, if you look back through time, you can see where these stereotypes sort of came from, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can train for both strength and hypertrophy, no matter which sport you compete in, and even if you compete in both, it's possible to do that as well. Which brings us to our guest for today, our first guest ever, Aaron Fergus.
All right, so today is a special show. We have guest Aaron Fergus, who lives in Greenville, South Carolina, and teaches at Greenville Technical College. And she is actually on Team Plant Built. She competed with us last year with the bodybuilders. She did physique and bodybuilding and won, and it was awesome. And she started off as the underdog, and she totally rocked it and took everything home with her. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Erin.
Well, hey, everybody, it's Erin. I have lived in Greenville, South Carolina for about the last 2 years, and I lived most of my adult life in Pensacola, Florida before then. I went to the University of West Florida and got an undergrad and master's in exercise science. My athletic background is more of an endurance athlete to start. Down in Florida, running, triathlon, all that is really a lot more visible and a lot more trendy than any kind of power sports or bodybuilding. So I really got into that when I moved up to South Carolina. I'd been a vegetarian since I was 17. I'm 31 now, so almost half my life. But when I came here, I met some of my staff members in the personal training program that were bodybuilders, and they said, oh, hey, you should try it. It kind of looks like you have the genetics for it. It's something I thought about because I always liked the look of muscle on women. So I figured, hey, why not? At least while I have some people that are working with me that are good at this stuff, I'll try it. And I decided, I might as well go fully vegan as well because I was making steps to get closer and closer. So it was kind of like, okay, March 1st, 2013, we're going to be a bodybuilder and we're going to be vegan at the same time. So
yeah, that's quite a change, like overnight.
Just did it all at once. Yeah.
So this is the first time I've lived in a city that had a Whole Foods that was in my city before it was like 4 hours away. So I figured, why not? I got the resources.
Yeah, that's pretty hard when there's no good vegan food nearby.
Well, yeah. It's good and it's bad and it's good too. It's good because it keeps you on point, you know? I mean, having too many places to eat out could be a little distracting sometimes.
Only for you.
And of course, there's the internet where I can get all my vegan junk food that I need.
Yeah.
So I have certifications with the ACSM and the NSCA. I've worked as a personal trainer, a group fitness instructor, a fitness director at a YMCA, but I've always kind of gone back to teaching. So the program that I teach in right now is a certificate program that takes the students about a year, and it's really hands-on, kind of half lecture, half lab, just teaching them to be personal trainers. So, you know, they sit for the ACSM exam, and they come out with the book work and the people work. So, I mean, it's really the most fun job I've ever had. And a lot of what I do in my own fitness world, I kind of treat myself like the guinea pig and test stuff out so that I can then tell my students, okay, this is great, this is not so great, this right. is what we want to do with clients, this is what we don't want to do. And I kind of use myself as the researcher. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've talked about that a few times, how you kind of have to use your own body as a science experiment to find out what does and doesn't work. And when you're in a place to teach other people, that's probably even cooler because you probably just have a lot more control over these sorts of like little experiments you do on yourself than just somebody who doesn't do this for a living.
Yeah, and
that's pretty cool.
You know, practicing what you preach is really helpful as well to establish credibility.
Yeah,
with
and
your
inspire
students,
your students, you know? As well. You're not just somebody who sits around and talks about fitness.
Not to discredit people, you know, people's level of education, understanding of fitness, it, you know, applying it to what you do in your everyday life that was helpful.
Today, in the country, it's been really cool to just show my students what vegan is because, I mean, literally moving here, I've met so many people that have never heard the word. They don't know anything about it. So then it's really nice for people to be like, well, can vegans have muscle? And then my coworkers just say, go talk to Erin.
Yeah.
Erin, go watch her work out. Like, clearly she's fine.
Yeah. Well, that's actually one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is I feel like when you get into power building or powerlifting or bodybuilding or a hybrid of the two, as a vegan, you're really showing that I feel like you just have more to prove as a vegan. So you're showing that, yes, you can build muscle, but also, but it's not just like pretty muscle. You can be strong too as a vegan. So I just feel like, and you can tell me if you feel the same way, that when you're doing it as a vegan, it's fun no matter what, but it's also a really good tool to use to prove a point that vegans can be well-rounded athletes and look really good doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many benefits to the lifestyle that people probably don't even think about. You know, the recovery, of course, you hear all vegan athletes say our recovery is through the roof. You know, one of the major things I noticed through my first prep was that a lot of the people at the gym were like, oh, hey, you still look happy and you're about 2 weeks out. Everyone else that comes in is miserable. And I said, yeah, because I'm still eating food that I like. And I'm not just like choking down this unseasoned boiled chicken all the time, and I sleep well and I have energy and all this kind of stuff. So that, you know, is a nice part to it. And then I think a big problem right now is just the media keeps shoving down our throats that we need protein to fuel ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And really just starting to lose touch with that. They think that, okay, I must eat this high protein breakfast so that I can have energy to
yeah.
go through the day.
Which is funny because protein doesn't really give you energy.
No.
I mean, protein serves a lot of really important purposes, no doubt, but energy is not really one of them. So
yeah, you get a certain amount in and then that's it. And the rest of your fuel should be from carbohydrates and fats. That's what's going to give you energy.
Which we can get plenty of very, 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 very easily.
Yeah.
So you just talked about your prep for your first bodybuilding show, or I'm sorry, for your last bodybuilding show. And when did you do your first powerlifting meet?
I haven't done a full meet. I've done just bench press competitions. I've done two bench press competitions. So the first one I actually did last year, and it was on March 1st. So it was on my first vegan anniversary. So I got to wear the nice
That's
little
great.
Vegan bodybuilding black tank top and the vegan little track short.
Uh-huh.
kind of nice. And then I did another one that was in the fall. So I think my strength ratio, I think I ended up lifting like 96% of my body weight. So I still, in competition, I tend to choke in that type of arena. So, you know, I've lifted much more of that just on my own, but I'm still hoping to get over body weight.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will very soon, actually. Yeah. So you did a bench press competition before your prep started, and then you did your bodybuilding show, and then very shortly after you did another bench press competition. Yeah, so a lot of people would say that the training for powerlifting and the training for bodybuilding are very, very different. And what we're talking about today is kind of how they can work synergistically together to achieve both goals. So how was your training throughout the three separate competitions?
Well, I know my approach to bodybuilding is a little different because, and I know this can somewhat be my downfall because I will like look at other competitors and go, oh, put me in the gym with that person and I'll probably massacre them. And then I have to remind myself, that's not what the sport is about. It's about the aesthetic part of it. But I've never wanted to be someone who aesthetically has a look that has no function behind it. So, you know, when I'm training, I still love to see my numbers go up on pretty much any exercise that I do. I like to see the strength add, and that's just as exciting to me as seeing the definition and the separations and that kind of thing. So I worked out with one of my friends who does powerlifting and strongman, and I've always kind of had a respect for the sport and thought, okay, I want to try these lifts to add them in and just see where my strength goes, see how, you know, if I build any extra muscle. And one of the main areas I wanted to build was my glutes. So starting to work on squats, and I found that I'm much better as a sumo deadlifter than a conventional because of the previous back injury. But, you know, those I noticed, not only they make me stronger, but they're giving me the aesthetic look that I want, the actual muscle building that I want. So they kind of just morph together into, hey, I can do these workouts where I'm lifting really heavy weight for just a few reps for a few sets, and it doesn't seem like I'm doing nearly as much as I do in a bodybuilding day, but yet when I get done, I really feel like I've done some work.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that so many people think, what do you think perpetuates this idea that the two styles of working out cannot be used in conjunction with each other? Like, why do you think people assume, well, you're a bodybuilder, you have to lift in like the 12 to 20 rep range for gains?
Right. Probably just stereotypes like anything else, because you do, you know, the most visible style of powerlifter is someone who could never be a bodybuilder. Just like you don't typically see bodybuilders doing those type of lifts. So it's just, I think it's just not very visible. I mean, you know, there's a couple people out there that do it, but everyone who's in a sport, they tend to get very, the blinders on. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few of us that really thrive on being multi-sport, you know? So like I have a background as a runner. So as long as I can keep my knees fine and my feet fine, I can still be a good runner, even as I continue to bodybuild. You know, I did the Apex Games, which is a CrossFit style competition. I don't compete in CrossFit.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
I'm not even a CrossFitter, but I went in there, but there was so much running involved that because I've always kept my cardiovascular fitness up and my endurance, I was able to compete well in that as a quote-unquote bodybuilder.
Now, what do you think? So there's a couple different ideas of what power building actually means. And some people say, well, it's when you combine strength training and hypertrophy training, which is kind of what we've been talking about here. But there's another saying, and I see like lots of memes about it and stuff, where people say, train like a power lifter, eat like a bodybuilder, which is another idea of what some people think power building is. And I know, because I worked with you, that that's kind of what you were doing. You were training with a lot of powerlifting techniques in low rep ranges, heavy weight, and eating like a bodybuilder. And how do you think that that diet affected you and your training?
I think, I mean, even as I was cutting down, you know, there's some mornings where it's like, oh, tofu for breakfast, that's all I get. But for me, I'm a pretty mental lifter, so even when I didn't have the typical fuel that someone would expect to have when they're lifting, like, I didn't fill up on donuts or oatmeal or anything like that, I still was able to lift heavy. I don't think that the energy or anything really affected me. But I do think it is quite interesting to say, okay, here's this sport that typically people don't have an aesthetic look, but then to be able to say, okay, well, I can keep my weight kind of low and I can keep my body fat low and I can look really good while I'm doing these lifts, and you can kind of combine the two things. But I don't think I really noticed my strength suffer at all, even as I was cutting down, because I'm very, you know, when I have a goal, if there's a program written out and I'm supposed to be hitting certain weights, I'm going to do everything I can to hit those weights.
Right. And that's something that I think a lot of people forget. It's something that happens to a lot of people, especially when they're in prep. They automatically assume that their strength is going to decline, which in all honesty, it probably is a little bit, if you're being really realistic, but that's not a reason to just throw in the towel and say, well, my strength is declining, so I'm just not even going to try to do what I did last week or more. And that's when people start to diet off their muscle.
Well, I think there's another important part of the equation that when it comes to contest prep, a lot of people fail because they forget about strength. They're like, well, you know, I'm preparing for my show, so all I should do is hypertrophy. And, you know, they're not working on their strength at all. And that's how they got to that level in the first place. So,
and if that sends different hormonal signals to your brain to not, that you don't need to hang on to that much muscle, so it starts to use it as fuel. And that's why I think all the way through contest prep, it is really, really beneficial to keep lifting really heavy and working in low rep ranges. I'm not saying work exclusively in low rep ranges, because higher rep ranges certainly do have their place, but your big focus should always be big compound movements with good form, heavy in a low rep range.
Right, and you know, you're keeping strong in your lower rep ranges, that's going to give you more strength in your higher rep ranges, which is going to result in even better workouts.
And more volume, which is going to equal more hypertrophy.
Right.
Which will help you in both your bodybuilding and your powerlifting.
Yeah, you say that to someone and they're like, huh? I thought I'm supposed to be doing all this, you know, high rep, low weight stuff. So it's almost like, by saying, yes, I lift heavy all the way up to the end, I get the same kind of reaction as saying, yes, I'm a vegan bodybuilder. Because you just don't, I mean, even people I've talked to lately, it's just, that's their focus. And I stayed heavy all the way up to the very end last year. I totally plan on doing that this year. I think it's going to work well for me. And so I don't know. I don't know why people think it's so strange.
But I kind of wanted to ask you, because I know that you've trained a lot of people and you train people to train people. So how would you use this kind of approach for somebody that doesn't necessarily want to compete? But I think most people who are new to the gym or amateur athletes, they want to be stronger and they want to look better. And I think that this style of training could be really beneficial to somebody who's even fairly new to working out. So how would you introduce somebody to this?
Even someone who's brand new to the gym, they see or know of deadlifts and squat and bench, and they're probably going to try these lifts anyway. So it would be best to go ahead and start by teaching the good form, which for some people, it might take a really long time to do that. You know, not going too heavy until they get good form. And then, you know, maybe just starting with something like a 5x5. You know, five sets of five reps, kind of find the weight where they can do that. I know, like on Thursdays, I do kind of a powerlifting style lower body where literally I do three movements. It's just a squat, a sumo deadlift, and a hip thruster. Okay, so I'm getting major target to the lower body, specifically the glutes, because I already have humongous quads. They don't need to get any bigger. I need to get the butt to catch up to that. But like I said before, I'm not doing a whole lot, but when I get done, I feel like, hey, I've really done some good work here. Mm-hmm. So something like that might be a good intro, you know, force form first, but then kind of building up and just letting them feel, okay, I'm not doing that many reps, but I feel like I really worked myself,
right.
You know, and then you're seeing a lot more lower back strength and just things that will transfer over to daily life.
Those main lifts, those are going to help your core stability so much, and people who are new to the gym usually don't have great core stability. So even starting with a lightweight, because a lightweight is going to feel heavy to somebody who is pretty new to the gym, and that's okay. You don't have to throw a ton of weight on the bar and say, I'm going to do one rep. Like Aaron said, getting the form down before you jump into these, well, I'm going to do a powerlifting program or power building program, is super important to not getting injured, because once you get injured, like, you're out. You're out of the game.
Yeah.
And I think one of the absolute most important things is someone who wants to start that, they need to find someone who has a heavy powerlifting background, because if you just find, I mean, I think about the gym I go to that's just kind of a big box gym, 90% of the trainers in there, I would not trust them to teach me even just a basic squat, because the form is just not the same way that it would be if you were learning it from someone who that's what they do.
Right.
So it's really interesting for myself to go, oh, hey, I have all this knowledge about a certain style of training, and then I go over to powerlifting style lifts and I'm like, I have to be humble. This is not my forte. Like, I have to be open to any kind of feedback that I get, little tweaks, things like that. And it's something that you don't ever fully perfect. You just have to keep getting closer and closer to what feels the best for you. And then you have to think about everybody's body type is different and style. And so a squat form for one person doesn't work for someone else. You know, you kind of have to feel that out. So, I guess just having the mindset of being open to continuing to evolve is another thing that someone new to this style of lifting needs.
Yeah. I think accepting that with some of those big lifts, like the squat and the deadlift, there's always room for improvement. There's always room to make the movement more efficient and safer. And you just, even when you know, Giacomo's been squatting, and Giacomo has a really good squat. He's been squatting for over half his life. And we still tweak stuff on his squat all the time, and it gets better and better. You know, even just learning the difference between like a bodybuilding bench press and a powerlifting bench, like those are two completely different exercises. And learning what benefits each one has and how to implement it is really important. So finding a good strength coach can be really, really helpful at first. These are not things that you're going to learn perfectly off a YouTube video on the internet. So if someone doesn't have access to a good strength coach, can you think of any resources that people could use online to get their feet wet, basically, not necessarily to become a champion powerlifter?
I mean, you can still go to something like YouTube, just making sure that the people that are teaching on there, you know, they do have a background to kind of back up what they're talking about. Or, you know, I have access to some videos from the NSCA that are more strength and conditioning style videos where you might watch for 20 minutes on one lift because they're using slow-mo and they're breaking it down and that kind of thing. So, I mean, anything that you can find that teaches it in little pieces instead of just, oh, hey, here's my deadlift. This is what it looks like. Now you go do it. That's not going to be cool. But something that really breaks it down, because a large part of my job is teaching students how to take someone who you say deadlift, they've never heard of it. Now, how do we see the initial movement? Like, let's break down and make sure they can already do things like a bodyweight squat and make sure that looks okay. And how do we appropriately progress? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect for anybody to try to start from, I don't know what this movement is, to I'm doing it in the same day.
Right.
It needs to create some progression and build up.
Yeah. I've heard of some people going to like strength and conditioning certification classes, and they spend 6 hours learning how to do like an Olympic lift with a dowel, and not even touching a weight all day long. And these are like fitness professionals already, usually going to get their next certification. And even still, it's like, you need to be humble and you need to realize you don't know everything. And these are not movements. Most of the time, they're not movements that feel natural. So you're putting yourself in these awkward positions. It's not something that you're just going to intuitively know how to do.
Everybody's body is different too. It's important to know that you're looking at someone else perform an exercise, and you might look completely different from them and still be doing it right.
Yeah.
So if you try to mimic someone else who has, you know, different leg limb arm length ratios, you know, it you might be completely off. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out how your body is supposed to move.
Yeah, that is true. So what's in the future for you, Aaron? What do you have coming up?
Well, right now prepping for June. Plant Belt's big throwdown. And then, very interesting, I don't know how I'm going to handle this when everybody else is eating a whole bunch of ice cream and whatnot, but planning on coming back to South Carolina and competing the very next weekend. It's a really important show here called The Supernatural. It's been kind of a hometown show the last couple years, and I've done it, and I have not placed well. So I'm hoping for some redemption there. It's sanctioned this year. It's a little more important, and several of my students are actually training for it. So it will be their first one. So we've kind of put a little team together. So for me, it's really important to show them, okay, I say I'm going to do something. I'm not going to let anything get in my way, and I'm going to go do it. So that'll be a lot of fun. at that point, I might go ahead and end the bodybuilding season for the year. Definitely want to continue getting my lift numbers up. Just this morning, when I hit a 200-pound squat PR, was talking to someone that said, hey, maybe you should think about doing a full meet at one point. And we know our teammate Sally Anderson went from bodybuilding to now powerlifting. So we know it can be done, mm-hmm. and I can eating like a bodybuilder and training like a powerlifter. Also, the Apex Games that I was talking about, they're doing another one, so might go back and try that again. Biggest thing I'm working on is trying to increase my mobility, because that is my one level of fitness that I don't really practice what I preach, mm-hmm. and need to get up on that. Then I can truly be multi-sport if I can actually do some yoga and that kind of stuff.
Well, I would say that you're already truly multi-sport, definitely more than most people, so that's pretty cool. You have a lot going on. You may not be the only one not eating ice cream, because we might be competing the following weekend, too.
I was thinking the same thing. The show in Connecticut is over here is an important one, because it has some good competition.
And that's the weekend after Plant Built, too. So yep. There might be a few of us sitting there grumpy.
Maybe
at
a scoop of ice cream instead of four.
Yeah.
Figure out how to get ice cream on the plane. Maybe we can figure that out. Yep, so.
Maybe. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
Well, you can look me up on Facebook. I try to, send me a friend request, and I like to connect with other vegans and people that are interested in lifting, competing, whatnot. I also have a Facebook athlete page. So if you look up Fergie-licious, not Fergalicious the way that Fergie did it, but with an IE, the girly vegan bodybuilder, you can find me there. Instagram at veganfergiefitness. Those will probably be the best ways to get in touch. And I'm also available for some online training, not nutrition. That is not my forte, but just training if someone's interested in doing that. So.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Erin. And we'll be seeing you. And we're 100 days out. We're 100 days out today.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So we'll be seeing you sooner than you think. But awesome. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Erin.
So for our product review today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're not going to review one specific product, but we're going to talk about lifting belts and vegan lifting belts in specific. So belts are worn in really big compound movements when you're lifting a lot of weight, usually in a relatively low rep range. And the problem with this is that 95% of lifting belts on the market are made of leather. So it's really hard to find a vegan lifting belt, and it's even harder to find a vegan lifting belt that is actually good. So we're going to talk about a couple today and compare and contrast them.
Okay.
So why would you wear a lifting belt? It is not just a fashion accessory. A lot of people say, I wear a lifting belt to protect my lower back. And while that may be true to a teeny tiny degree, the main reason that you wear a lifting belt is so that you have something to press against when you're doing these big lifts and you take a really, really deep breath, and it helps you to create intra-abdominal pressure so you don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. I mean, speaking from my own personal experience in, being in the gym culture for a while, There's a misconception that wearing a belt is basically an excuse to not have to build your low back up, because a belt will just do the work for you. And that's obviously not the case.
Yeah, the belt doesn't do anything on its own unless you know how to use it and how to breathe properly. Just wearing a belt and doing what you've always done is not going to make a difference. So you mainly use it when you're lifting really heavy and you need to take that big bracing breath, like in a squat or a deadlift, or even a really heavy bent over row.
Right. I mean, your abdominal wall is what's usually bracing your breath, but I mean, it's only going to be able to help so much. That's where the belt comes into play.
And they're very uncomfortable. No lie. They are uncomfortable. They take a long time to get used to, but they do help. Mm-hmm. I find them to help significantly in making me more aware of bracing my core properly. Mm-hmm. So Giacomo, tell us about your belt, because I know that it's one of the best vegan belts out there.
I got my belt from Strength Shop USA, and fortunately nowadays there's actually more options out there than there used to be. There's different types of belts. There's a single prong, double prong, and lever belts. And there's advantages and disadvantages to each. I think what it really comes down to at the end of the day is personal preference. I chose a double prong belt.
Although now I realize that there's not really much of a difference between double and single prong belts. The double prongs, I guess in theory, were supposed to keep the belt balanced from top to bottom, but it really doesn't make a difference. And I think the single prong one, honestly, is a little easier to get on and off. Anyhow, the advantages to having a single or double prong, and like I said, it really makes no difference, so you might as well go with the single one, is that you can adjust the belt a lot easier.
Up or down on your core?
Exactly, exactly. Whereas opposed to the lever belt, once you set it, it's locked in. And that can be really helpful, you know, because there, depending on the lift that you're doing, whether it's a squat or a deadlift or a bench press, you may want to wear the belt a little looser or a little tighter. And that's where that's helpful intra-workout.
And why would somebody want a lever belt?
Well, the lever belt is great because you pick the spot where you want to set it, and then it locks in perfectly every time. And it's also very easy to take off. I mean,
because once you've finished a really heavy set, like the kind of a set that require that you're wearing a belt for, once you're done, you want to get out of that belt so fast, it's not even funny. And with the lever belt, you just pull the little lever and it's loose.
Yeah.
And you can breathe again.
Yeah, exactly. Now, obviously, well, I mean, the lever belts can be adjusted in the middle of your workout if you want to wear it a little looser or a little tighter, depending on the lift you're doing. However, you're going to have to bust out a screwdriver to take it off the space that it's on the belt and move it over, which can kind of be
a pain.
Yeah,
that sounds a little impractical for an actual workout. I can see doing that during a competition, right. But I can't imagine doing that in the middle of a workout.
I mean, plus depending on where you're at, say you're, you know, gaining or losing weight for whatever reason, you know, you're going to have to adjust the lever belt too. So, I mean, it has its advantages and it has its disadvantages.
And what's the name of the belt again?
It's a Strength Shop 13mm double prong belt.
Okay, so that's the belt that I would recommend for a vegan who is seriously getting into powerlifting, maybe looking to compete. Maybe already does compete. It's a really, really good belt. How much did that run, roughly?
It's about $45, I think. $45, okay. $50 plus shipping.
Yeah, that's not really expensive compared to a lot of belts, but it's not super cheap either. If you are looking for something that's really portable and you're probably not looking to compete, but you do want to do these lifts from time to time, I really recommend the Valio Nylon Velcro belt. It actually can get really, really tight, even just from being Velcro. And I find that this is what I use. I find that you can adjust it really, really easily because it's just Velcro. But you can also get it really, really tight on yourself without any help. And I've found it to give me plenty of intra-abdominal pressure. And I think that ran about $20. And it fits right in your gym bag, whereas the Strength Shop one, it's pretty big. I mean, it's bulky. It's kind of a pain to carry around. So
it's a thicker belt, though. So there's depending on what you're looking to use.
Yeah, the nylon one is not very thick, but you know, if you're not doing crazy one rep max lifts all the time, then the nylon one can be really suitable. And I know a lot of people that have one of each, just because the nylon one is so much easier to carry around.
How is it to take off after your lift?
Oh, so easy. You just pull on the little Velcro tab, and it just pops open. So I like that too. I mean, as you open it, you feel like a busted can of biscuits. Like that's literally what it feels like. Like when you bang the biscuit can against the counter, you just feel like your whole, like you just pop open, which is actually kind of fun.
Yeah. And my belt, I actually have to pull it even tighter
just to get it off. Yeah. So they have their pros and cons. If you're looking to compete, definitely look at the Strength Shop USA one. And that is an approved belt for competing, right?
IPF approved. Yes.
IPF approved. So That's a good one right there.
Moving on to our Q&A segment for today, we have a question from The Fit Herbivore on Instagram. How do you adjust your macros during prep? Lower carbs, up protein, up or lower fat?
So this was a question that was on an Instagram post of a picture of my dinner one night being on prep, and it was like multiple plates of food. It was just me trying to make a little food look like a ton of food, basically. But it was very satisfying. So now that I'm on prep, my calories have been cut down about 400 or so calories to start. And my protein actually went up a little bit because it's important to keep protein up when you're in a caloric deficit. Also, protein is thermogenic, so you actually burn more calories digesting protein than you do with carbs or fat. So bumped up the protein just a little bit, nothing crazy, 15 grams I think it went up. And carbs and fat both go down. How much is really, really going to depend on the person, so I'm not going to give exact numbers there because I feel like that's an irresponsible thing to do because other people will try to copy it. But so it's pretty low, you know, I'm a little bit hungry, but every fourth day I eat my maintenance level of calories again. So 3 days in a row, I eat these lower calories, lower carbs, lower fat, not low by any stretch of the imagination, just lower than the 2,500 calories that I've been eating for the last month. And then on the fourth day, I bump everything back up to where it was, basically, right before I started cutting. And what this does is, like we talked about in the last episode, it keeps your hormones healthy, keeps your leptin high, gives you energy to keep your strength up in the gym. So that is where we're at right now. And from here, carbs and fat will probably drop as my progress stalls, which it doesn't appear to be stalling anytime soon. So that's awesome. And our next question is actually a continuation of the first question from the Fit Herbivore on IG. And they ask, should you lower the training volume during prep since recovery is hindered by cutting calories? What kind of cardio? Should you do cardio? Should you eat back the calories you burn during cardio?
I'll jump in here. During prep, I would not recommend lowering your training volume at all, just because you're cutting calories. It is really important to maintain your muscle mass that you built before prep. And by lowering your training volume, all you're going to do is tell your body, I don't need this muscle anymore, so we can just start burning it for fuel. It's okay. And that's obviously not going to help you because, you know, you want to lean out by losing your body fat, not your body fat and your muscle. So no, I would continue to train as hard as you possibly can. And the biggest hurdle, well, yeah, I mean, physically, it's going to be harder with cutting your calories, and it will only get harder incrementally. But the mental barrier is what you're going to have to push through. You got to really remember that, you know, while your brain may give out first, that your body will keep pushing. And if you keep that in mind, I think that you can remain fairly strong during your prep if you stay focused. Regarding what kind of cardio and whether or not you should do it, cardio is a tool for when progress is stalling, and it should not be overdone, and it should only be put in when absolutely necessary. Regarding what kind of cardio, you know, and once again, it's going to vary by person. However, I'd say that high intensity cardio is something I would start to throw into the mix first and use high predominantly.
High intensity interval training.
Thank you. High intensity interval training. And there's a lot of back and forth in that, well, you're not going to be burning as much calories, so you're not going to be losing as much body fat when you do high intensity interval training as opposed to slow steady cardio. And to that I say, well, you know, maybe you're not burning as many, you're burning fewer calories while you're active doing your HIIT. However, while you're at rest, your metabolism is boosted way more.
Which is really important because when you are at a caloric deficit, your metabolism will slow down as you adapt to the dieting phase. So by doing HIIT, you help counter that.
Right. And why would you want to burn off your muscle while you're doing cardio when you can burn off less of your muscle by doing HIIT, and then while you're at rest, burn more body fat?
Actually, there have been some studies that show that you can actually build muscle exclusively through HIIT training. They did this study on a Wingate bicycle, and they did it in the quad muscles, and they found that the quad muscles actually grew from doing just HIIT training when done properly, like all out, balls to the wall for 20 seconds and recover for anywhere from 1 to even 2.5 minutes. So it doesn't sound like much, but if you do it right, you'll want to puke at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, there may be a use for slow and steady cardio, but for the most part, I mean, above and beyond, you should be focusing on HIIT training during prep.
Yeah, and I mean, you can only do HIIT training a few times a week because it is hard. It's really, really hard. This isn't something you can do every day, nor should you. So I would say the lower intensity cardio comes into play when you've maxed out as much HIIT training as you can do. Then you can start adding in some lower intensity cardio.
And should you cut back the calories? Should you eat back the calories you burn during cardio?
So a lot of this comes from the MyFitnessPal app, where you log your activity and people eat back however many calories they burned, because MyFitnessPal is just set up really weird. In prep, no, absolutely not. You're not eating back any of the calories that you're burning off at all. I mean, we're not really... In prep, not very many people are like logging how many calories they burn, so that's not even really a factor. You just eat the numbers that you're supposed to eat and do the workouts that you're supposed to do. And basically, you're creating a deficit. You're creating a deficit more through your diet than through your training, if that makes sense. So no, you don't eat back the calories that you burn during cardio. All right, everybody, and thanks so much for tuning in to our 8th episode. You can get at us with questions or comments or concerns on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. We're Vegan Proteins on there, and you can also reach us through veganproteins.com. I'm Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you guys in 2 weeks.
See you then.